Welcome to Dreamland, a program dedicated to an examination of areas in the human experience not easily nor neatly put in a box. Things seen at the edge of vision, awakening a part of the mind as yet not mapped, and yet things every bit as real as the air we breathe but don't see. This is Dreamland.
It is indeed. Good evening, everybody. I'm Art Bell. This evening, as usual, Linda Moulton Howe from Philadelphia with her report, followed by Stephen Jacobson and a program on mind control. It's going to be very interesting, particularly in view of all the recent seemingly nonsensical shootings by youngsters, because that's what the program's going to be about. You're going to want to stay tuned for that. Some sad news, sorry to say. Colonel Philip Corso, the day after Roswell, Colonel Philip Corso, has suffered a massive heart attack. It occurred Tuesday, June 9th. Originally, they thought he suffered about 90% heart damage. However, after about 5 days, he now rests in a serious condition, somewhat stable. And I talked to his family earlier today. They confirmed the fact that he did have a heart attack, is now in the hospital. And if we all pray, maybe out in 5 days if all goes well. So I thought you should know that. WBPA AM in Elkhorn City, Kentucky. Hello there in Kentucky, and welcome to the program. WPKE in Pikeville, Kentucky as well. G2 in Kentucky. Welcome to Dreamland. Glad to have you along. So that's the lineup for tonight. Shortly, we begin. Well, all right, now from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, investigator into crop circles, animal mutilations, producer of environmental films that have won awards, a general science reporter for us from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, here is Linda Moulton Howe. Linda, hi.
Hi, Art. I'm very sorry to hear about Colonel Corso, and may we all pray that he does recover. On Monday this past week, June 8th, people on the island of Madagascar in the Indian Ocean reported a flying column of grasshoppers at least 7 miles long.
Wow.
Yeah, it was the largest swarm of these flying insects there in more than 50 years. The government is trying to help farmers protect rice and other crops. Another record breaker is the global climate. Recently, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration told the Clinton administration at a White House meeting that not only was 1997 the warmest year on record, but that global temperatures in the first 5 months of 1998 have been unprecedented. NOAA Administrator James Baker told Vice President Al Gore and other scientists and reporters that global warming could be making the impact of El Niños more severe and could explain why the past 6 months have set temperature records worldwide. Baker said, quote, "This wetter and warmer winter that we've just experienced gives us a glimpse of what we can expect in a greenhouse gas, globally warmed world," unquote. And now there is a cooling trend in the Pacific known as La Niña, the opposite of El Niño, which could also mean increases in rainfall on the West Coast in coming months. Another environmental contaminant, toxic chemicals such as PCBs, have been measured in high quantities in the fatty tissue of seals in the Barents Sea above Norway, and in even higher concentrations in the polar bears who eat those seals. And this month, the Times of London newspaper reported that scientists at the Norwegian Polar Institute have found polar bear cubs with both male and female sex organs that might be linked to increased toxic chemical waste in the Arctic waters. Russia, for example, has reportedly continued to produce PCBs for its electrical transformer manufacturing and those industrial waste runoffs into the sea waters. Friday, I talked with Dr. Andrew DeRocher, a Canadian zoologist studying the Arctic polar bears, who found what he calls, quote, pseudo-hermaphroditic cubs. He uses pseudo because technically a hermaphroditic condition means that both male and female genitalia are fully functioning. But in the female cubs so far, the male genitalia are not. Dr. DeRocher.
Well, basically what we have is we have fairly normal female genitalia, and what we have is an expression of a male genitalia right in front of the female genitalia. So we have a female vagina with a very small penis in front of them, basically. Mm-hmm. And so what these findings were basically found during the course of a long-term population monitoring and ecology study.
Which started what year?
Well, it goes back, it has a long history at the Polar Institute, polar bear research starting in about 1970. But my involvement with it has been for the last 3 years now here in Norway.
And when were the first hermaphroditic polar bears discovered?
That was in 1996, and we were alerted to that when we were doing some standard capture work, and we caught a sibling yearlings, one-year-old cub that was still with their mother. And we do a standard check of the sex on the cubs, and we rolled them over. And it was quite clear that there was something wrong with the first one, and I rolled over the second one, and it was quite clear that it was exactly the same as the sibling.
Meaning that it had this small penis as well as the vaginal opening.
That's correct, yes.
And when you say it was clear that something was wrong, what did you mean?
Well, I've been working on polar bears for almost 14, 15 years now, and I had not ever seen anything like this before. Mm-hmm. I can recall one instance in the Canadian Arctic seeing something a little bit abnormal. But certainly when I was quite alerted to it when I realized that it was two siblings that had exactly the same sort of abnormality.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when we started to think a bit more closely about following or checking the females that we captured a little bit more closely for abnormalities. And I guess now we have 7 females that we've captured in the last 3 years that have shown some sort of abnormality.
How and why could this be happening?
Well, the big difficulty we've got is that we're not really sure why we're seeing these sorts of abnormalities. We have two sort of hypotheses. One is that this is fairly natural occurrence in mammals in general, and these type of disorders are found in humans, in laboratory animals, and domestic animals.
What are the conditions in which this can arise in nature in other situations?
Well, there's an effect called a Freemartin effect, and this would be the sort of situation where you may have a litter of puppies, let's say, and maybe you have 5 male puppies and 1 female puppy. And when they're inside the mother, what you can get is some hormone flow from the male puppies into the females, into the single female in this example. And what happens is then the female can start to show some masculine traits.
Mm-hmm. And that's an in-uterine condition.
That's correct, yes. And that's called a Freemartin effect. Now, the other way that this can happen is that if you have perhaps a tumor in the mother, so we can have maybe an adrenal or an ovarian tumor. And what happens is you can get excessive androgen secretion, so too much of the male hormones coming across to a female that's in utero.
Do either of these hypotheses seem to apply, however, to these polar bears?
Well, it's hard to say. We don't know what we're looking at here. We don't have a lot of information yet on the bears. The third real hypothesis is that we could be looking at hormone disruption that's induced by toxic chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
And that one has some credence as well as the other two, because we're talking about the polar bears in the Barents Sea, Svalbard area, and these bears have higher levels of PCBs, these polychlorinated bisphenols. They're a toxic chemical. And these bears in the Svalbard area have higher levels than anywhere else in the Arctic. And we have some indication that these toxic chemicals are having effects on other elements of the bear's physiology. So it's quite possible that it could be affecting the hormones during the development of bears. So that is one of our concerns.
Yes, one of the quotes in the article is that researchers have been trying to determine if links exist between manufactured chemicals and sexual deformities and diseases in humans. Such a link could explain why the sperm counts of men in industrialized countries have fallen in the last 5 decades. Could you comment on that?
Well, I'm not an endocrinologist, and I'm not really an ecotoxicologist either. My specialty is population ecology. So I would prefer not to comment on things outside of my expertise, really.
Do you think that that's a viable hypothesis, however, that chemical and toxic pollution could be affecting not only polar bears, but human males?
I believe it's a workable hypothesis. I think there's some very good data to indicate that toxic chemicals in general are influencing the sexual and functional development of humans in general. I think that evidence is getting quite clear. And certainly the link, if it's in wildlife, then it's certainly in humans. And certain populations of humans in the world right now are quite dependent on wild populations for food sources. And certainly those populations of humans are at quite high risk for interference from these sorts of pollutants.
Because they're eating the meat that is affected in the animals they're eating by all the PCBs and pollutants.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. And so, I mean, there is some great concerns, particularly in the Arctic, for some of the people that are quite heavily reliant on marine mammal populations.
And have you found the same kinds of sexual characteristic changes in other creatures in the sea besides the polar bears?
There's not a lot of information on wild populations relative to this type of effect, so it's a little bit hard to tell. Right now we're into a state where we're trying to collect information from other researchers around the pole, trying to find out what they're seeing relative to their polar bear populations that they're studying.
Well, the polar bear is quite a ways up the food chain, so that would suggest that the PCBs entering the polar bear are coming from what it's eating, correct?
Their major food sources are three different species of seals. They eat ring seals, bearded seals, and harp seals, or Greenland seals.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is, yes, you're correct that the toxic chemicals are moving up through the food chain, and through a process of what we call biomagnification, the polar bears are certainly at the top of the peak of the hill, basically, and are collecting all these toxic chemicals. Now, the problem with a lot of these things, like these PCBs, they are what we call lipophilic, meaning that they love fat or that they attach themselves to fat molecules. And what's particularly hard on polar bears is that when they catch a ring seal or a bearded seal, these animals can contain up to 30 to 50% of their body weight as fat, this thick blubber layer. And when a polar bear catches a seal, it usually eats just the fat off of the seal.
Hmm.
So what happens is there's this really steep jump between ringed and bearded seals, which are feeding lower down in the food chain. All of a sudden you jump into polar bears, which are eating these highly polluted fat tissues.
Now, in terms of how this would work in the biology of the bear, they take in the PCBs and it's affecting their entire system. Why would it specifically affect the sexual physical physiognomy of the bear?
Well, we're not really clear on why these particular defects have been found. We're not drawing a link necessarily directly to toxic chemicals. It's just one hypothesis. But, I mean, sexual differentiation is a finely controlled hormonal issue. So by just changing hormonal concentration slightly, it's a very sensitive area of development. And similar changes have been seen in other species of fish, where you can change the sexual characteristics of sex by changing hormone concentration. So it's likely that we're seeing much more changes, and many more changes in the polar bears than just in sort of the external anatomy. We believe that there's probably, we know there are physiological changes in the bears in response to these chemicals. We're seeing changes in circulating hormone levels. We're seeing changes in vitamin levels. And we also have some pretty strong indications of impaired immune function in some of the polar bears as well.
And what is the next step? You're going to keep linking now with other scientists, and what is your outline for the next several months?
Well, what we're doing now is actually our major research focus is not actually on these sort of anatomical traits relative to toxic chemicals, but we're entering into more directed studies on the immune system function in polar bears. And here what our particular concern is these sorts of abnormalities, it appears that the females can still reproduce and have young. So that doesn't seem to be a problem as we know it now. So, but what our concern is that perhaps these PCBs are affecting the immune system. So basically, if an animal's immune system is impaired, what can happen is a disease that they would maybe be exposed to normally, they all of a sudden become extremely vulnerable to. So it's a little bit like not being able to fight off the common cold all of a sudden. So these bears may be able to succumb to diseases that they'd normally be able to fight off. And so that's our sort of our more immediate concern, is how the immune system of these bears is functioning under this sort of, in this type of environment of toxic chemicals.
If there was an immune problem and the polar bears did begin to die of diseases that otherwise they could have fought off with a healthy immune system, and the polar bear population became smaller and smaller, what else might happen as a consequence of the decline of polar bears?
Because it's at the top of the food chain, it's unlikely that we'd see any large extinction ripple through the food chain. It may be just that you just get an area that doesn't have polar bears anymore. And for myself, having worked in the Arctic for a long time, I can't really imagine that it would feel like the Arctic anymore without polar bears.
So, Art, everywhere we turn, the world is reminding us that we are changing it.
Linda, I have a story that I would like you to follow with the one that you just did in mind. Last week, circulating on the Internet, Matt Drudge, as a matter of fact, had a story on it. There was on a site that monitors nuclear detonations.
Right.
An 8.4 reported. Now, I don't know whether you heard about that
I
or not.
I did, and I went to that site.
Okay. It probably is a false report. And the scientists who recorded it sent back information that said that they thought that it was a miscalibration error.
Yes.
One more thing, Linda. There's a follow-up that is on the Internet today indicating that Europe, including France and a whole swath of Europe, experienced 1 or 2 days of intense radiation, about 1,000 times above normal.
All right, I will get into that more. I tried actually to access that site that was supposed to be the originator, and there was like a firewall up. You could not get through, and it was mysterious, and that's what I heard too, that it was an error. But if there has been radiation reported, that does change this whole story.
Yes, it does. Anyway, Linda, how do people get hold of you?
Yeah, please fax me at area code 215-491-9842. That's 215-491-9842 about important environmental issues and stories in your area or unusual phenomena. And for listeners who have been asking me about the availability of my book, Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 1, which has all the color photos and illustrations that goes with my new book, Volume 2, you can also fax that same number to get information. And the new book is out in bookstores everywhere, so I look forward to people's comments on either of those books as well.
All right, Linda. See you next week, and thanks a million.
Thank you.
Take care. From the high desert, this is Dreamland.
From the Kingdom of Nye, this is Dreamland with Art Bell.
It is Dreamland, and in a moment we're going to be talking about something that has a great interest for me. I've talked a lot about it. And tonight my guest is going to be Steve Jacobson. Steve Jacobson is going to be talking about mind control. And we're going to at least investigate the possibility that some of what's been going on with our children is perhaps intended to be going on. He'll be up next. All right, I want to say this one more time, and I'm sure I kind of caught Linda by surprise. But once again, floating around the internet last week, or actually the week before, I believe. Well, last week it was there. Matt Drudge picked up on it, and it was everywhere, that a site that normally monitors nuclear testing recorded an 8.4, and I think it was in Siberia, somewhere in Russia. And about an 8.4, and that was, you know, we had everybody checking on it, Jim Berkland, everybody. And then I saw a message indicating the scientists who responded finally to some email on that website said, well, there was a calibration error. And so I dismissed it pretty much at that point. Earlier today, I read that radiation levels in France and some other countries across Europe had, during a two-day period, risen about 1,000 times above normal. And then the light bulb went on, and I connected the two. And I'm not saying that anything has happened, but I am now beginning to be somewhat suspicious that some sort of test has been conducted or an accident has occurred. And all I ask is that you bear that in mind over the next several weeks, and don't be surprised if we suddenly hear about some accident. At any rate, Stephen Jacobson, a graduate of the Boston University School of Communications and creator of the audio series Mind Control in America, spent 13 years in the filmmaking business and witnessed firsthand the effects from the other side of the camera. Stephen was given access to private study conducted to determine the best way to program and deprogram the mind. And here he is. Stephen, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure to be with you.
Stephen, somebody the other day sent me a list of school killings over the past, I can't recall how long, a few years, and it was several pages long. And of course, including the most recent horrible occurrence in Oregon that I'm sure you're well aware of.
Yes.
And I just sat there staring at the list, and I have several times talked about this on the air on my other program. And I'm telling you, I'm extremely suspicious. I know something has changed with our young people. Now, crime for adults is down a bit. For young people, it's through the roof. The school shooting business has gone nuts. And so I'm not prepared to say what it is because I don't know. I just know that it's not the normal stuff that people talk about. It's not television in general. I mean, when I'm going to be 53 years old later this month, and I saw lots of people die on TV, lots of them, when I was young. As a matter of fact, if anything, it was cleaner dying than we get today. You know, you shot them and they just fell down. You didn't see blood and guts. So I tend to think it's not normal TV. People say parenting, well, it's changed, but I don't think that's the reason. I have a feeling that you think you might know why.
Well, I think before the evening is out that your listeners will have a clear indication of some of the factors that are involved in this epidemic of headlines about children killing children.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that what we are seeing is the symptom and result of a scientifically induced nervous breakdown as a nation, collectively. In other words, when we see incidents like this that are not natural, children killing children, even children killing themselves, this is not something that is supposed to happen. And there's a reason why it is happening, and there are some factors involved that center around the mind control issue. Now, you've mentioned briefly my background in communications. When I was working in film, I worked in a number of different capacities, but primarily as a film editor. And working as an editor, it was easy to see how simple it is to change the meaning of an event or change the meaning of what someone says through the simple process of editing, either by cutting out a statement or adding a reaction shot and thus silently comment on what is being said or what is being shown.
Well, Stephen, I'm I've been interviewed by about every major network and media, you know, every major newspaper in America. And so I can, and TV station, I can vouch for what you're saying. They can make an interview, believe me, into any damn thing they want it to be.
That is correct, and that's where the problem lies. The we're both aware, and many people, many of your listeners, I'm sure, are aware of how manipulative and plastic the medium is. And that gives us a hint at what one of the major problems is. We are living in a virtual reality. We're living in a reality that has been manufactured. We are the most manipulated and controlled society in history, primarily because of all the programming and conditioning that we all undergo through both the mass media and public education. Now, many of you are probably familiar with George Orwell's famous book, 1984,
nice.
In which he warned that people were in danger of losing their freedom of mind without being aware of it while it was happening,
mm-hmm.
because of psychological, emotional, and intellectual manipulation. In other words, mind control. Now, how I got involved in investigating this whole issue, I think, is a good place to start the discussion. I was working in media, and back in 1980, I was given the results of private research investigating hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And it was as a result of getting that material, studying it, that I saw the implications of the all-encompassing impact that media has on us, including myself. And I, even though I was working in media, I didn't fully appreciate it until I received this material. And that led to my eventually leaving New York City, where I was working at the time, and leaving the career that I was pursuing to investigate this whole issue of mind control and mental manipulation. I began first with an investigation of the use of hypnotic techniques in media, and then branched out into a wider investigation to understand the context in which it was being used. And that research, that investigation, led to the production of two audio cassettes, the first two in a series on the subject. The first one was titled Mind Control in America, which is a summary of the mind control issue. It defines the principles involved, how it works, and we'll get into that in a moment, how it works. It describes the different techniques that are used in the media and gives examples for the listener to hear so that the listener has a frame of reference from which to recognize these techniques when they observe them being used. Most people are not aware of the things that affect them subconsciously. Generally, people are not looking for those kinds of things unless those things are pointed out to them. They don't know what to look for. And that's why this particular audio cassette, to give people that information. And then it places the whole issue into historical perspective. The companion tape, also about mind control, deals with it from the aspect of money and economics, how the mind control issue impacts on money and economics. The idea is that psychological warfare and economic warfare work together, and they are both being waged against us, and we are feeling the pressure of it. And when we are seeing headlines of children killing children, these are simply the symptoms, the effects of a much wider problem, and that is one of psychological warfare that we have been under for a good number of years.
All right, Stephen, let's get specific. Are you suggesting, and we'll get to motivations and all of that later, but are you suggesting that there is an overall, a coordinated effort to produce this result? And you said the result was scientifically
yes.
induced a nervous breakdown.
That is exactly what I am suggesting, that these things do not happen by accident, that this is not happening by accident, that there is a design behind it all, and that it is meant to lead us to a particular in a particular direction.
Okay, well, that it begs a million questions.
Sure does.
First of all, what the hell are we talking about? Are we talking about subliminal messaging that's occurring?
Part of it. That's part of it.
Now, there's laws against that, you know.
No, they're not.
No, there's not.
No, they're not. I know that that strikes you perhaps as odd because you are under the assumption that there were laws protecting us from subliminal messages.
You're right. I'm under that impression.
A lot of people are, and you are only responding to the conditioning the way it has been applied to many people. Many people are supposed to think that there are laws against it. There aren't. In fact, the January issue of the magazine Civilization, which
yes.
is the official publication of the Library of Congress.
Yes.
They have a story in there admitting that the use of subliminal messages is an everyday common phenomenon. It's been going on for a long time, and no one is bringing it to the attention of the public. Except now.
Okay, let's
talk
go.
Radio.
Let's,
you want it
fine,
right now,
let's
what?
Do it. Let's go back in time a little bit. I remember when I was young, during those times when I was paying attention to what was going on the screen at a drive-in theater, which was only a very small portion of the time, actually, that occasionally one would get a craving for one of their mustard-smothered hot dogs, and that there was subliminal messaging going on back then
right.
In order to get you to purchase a product.
That is correct. In fact, this whole story broke in the 1950s, around 1956,
yep.
57.
Yep.
And that the famous example is the projecting, flashing of ads in a movie theater. The messages were hungry, eat popcorn, and
right.
drink Coca-Cola.
Right.
And as a result, sales increased for both of those items.
Right. Oh, absolutely correct. But then it was my understanding there was a specific law passed against that. And you're telling me that's not true?
Not true. And in fact, at that same time, there was a big brouhaha over this whole issue. Congress got involved,
yeah.
different state legislatures, because people were upset, and rightly so, because their minds were being tampered with.
Correct.
Here was research being done and applied. And I refer to Vance Packard's famous book back then in 1957, The Hidden Persuaders, in which he revealed that American industry was researching the technology of subliminal perception so that they could motivate people to buy their products. Well, the implications of that are very far-reaching because the ultimate control over people is to control them without their conscious awareness.
Of course.
And here is subliminal technology being used and messages being used to do exactly that, and people got upset. And that's why there were laws, legislation considered by Congress, considered by several state legislatures. But as things died down, nothing happened.
All right, let me stop you again and ask you a specific question. Are there laws concerning the broadcast, and when I say broadcast, I mean public airwaves, the broadcast of subliminal messaging by or regulation by the Federal Communication Commission?
There's nothing.
Nothing?
There's nothing protecting
nothing?
It. And even if there were, it would be well near impossible to police because by its very nature, a subliminal message, we are not supposed to be able to consciously see or hear a subliminal message. And unless it's on film, you can physically examine a piece of film, but on videotape, you got a problem. You're going to have to go through it frame for frame, and it's going to be very time-consuming to try to locate all of the...
Well, you're really blowing my mind. I was absolutely certain about this law or at least regulation business, and you're saying there's nothing.
No, there's nothing.
There's
nothing. So, like anything else, the public's attention is directed towards something else, and then something else becomes a priority. And in the case of a law protecting us from subliminal messages, it was replaced by some other concern at the time.
All right. What do we know, as a next question, about how effective subliminal messaging is?
Okay, let me ask you this. You ever buy something and later on wonder, why did you buy it? All right.
Well, yeah,
here's
but
another
one.
Many of your listeners may be able to relate to this.
But, Stephen, I'm an impulsive buyer, so how would I know?
Well, gee, that's the conditioning. That's the programming, to be impulsive, but to be impulsive with a preference for a particular product or a particular idea.
Uh-huh.
Now, in the case of ideas, this carries over into other areas, not just products, selling products.
Well, Stephen, I have absolute preferences about the products I buy. There's no question about it, but I would like to think they're my own.
Well, yes, wouldn't we all? The very idea that our thoughts may not be our own is a very unsettling idea that most people would not even want to contemplate at all.
That's for doggone sure.
But by giving it some consideration, we can shed some light on some of the problems that we face today. And by looking at it dispassionately, we can gain information that we need to deal better with the world as we find it, and with situations that are going to arise as time goes on. But this idea of having a preference for a product, or even sometimes if you have ever said something or done something and then later on wondered, well, why did I say that? Why did I do that?
Oh, yes.
All these things are very likely the result of a conditioned response being built up in us. Now, the goal for any propagandist or any advertiser is to build into us, into our minds, a conditioned response that that is favorable to their particular message. How this is done? The first order of business is to create the circumstances that are going to induce a favorable state of mind for the message. Now, that state of mind is the hypnotic state of mind.
Well, how do you induce that? In the course of either a commercial or a program.
Real easy. Using television as the example. Television, think about it. Whenever you have observed young children sitting in front of a TV set, or even older adults, they have this glassy-eyed, vacant look in their eyes.
Transfixed, yes.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
And that is because they are in a trance state. Television. Doesn't matter what you're watching. It's the nature of the medium. Television induces a hypnotic trance in the viewer. It doesn't matter what you're watching. This is a physiological response to the medium.
This is a physiological response, period. You're not suggesting that the content itself is endeavoring to specifically put you in a
That's later, because there are techniques that do that. I will get to that.
Okay, I'll give you that. I mean, you sit in front of TV and you are absorbed.
That's right. You're fixated and in a trance state. Now, this state of mind, the hypnotic state of mind, is a very natural state. We go in and out of this throughout the day.
Okay.
The quickest and simplest way to define it would be as a twilight state of mind. Just like when we are drifting off to sleep at night or just waking in the morning, there is no conscious mental activity going on. The mind is a blank slate.
All right, but Stephen, here is where I want you to delineate something for me. I more or less get in the same state when I sit down and read an engrossing book.
Yes.
Describe the difference to me.
There's no difference because all hypnosis is focused attention.
Right.
You're focusing the attention of one of the five senses. In the case of media or reading, using the sense of sight or sense of hearing as well when you're talking about television. So the whole point, even a hypnotist, the whole point is using language and his voice as a mechanism to create triggers of sound, to get his subject to lock on to the sound and the sing-song pattern of his voice so that the mind goes into this trance state, this blank state where there is no conscious mental activity
going on. All right, we are at the top of the hour, so you've got several minutes to relax. Go ahead and relax, and I will certainly accept what you have said. that sitting in front of a television or reading or doing any concentrated work will cause you to go into a kind of a trance state and a very receptive state in general terms. And we'll pick up on it when we get back. I'm Art Bell. This is Dreamland.
You're hearing Dreamland from the Kingdom of Nye with Art Bell.
That's me. And I've always thought my thoughts were my own. Haven't you? But I'm willing to entertain the possibility that they're not. And so should you. And that is exactly what we're talking about. My guest is Stephen Jacobson, and the subject is mind control. And you have to at least entertain the possibility that you've been influenced. And that's what we're talking about. Fascinating stuff. We'll get right back to them. Listen, a quick programming note for the first time on radio that I'm aware of. Tomorrow night, two Hopi elders are going to join us. One of them may speak English. The other does not. There will be a translator. As far as I know, it is the first time that anything of this sort has been done. That'll be 11 o'clock Pacific on Coast. Well, all right, back now to Stephen Jacobson. We have had explained, and I certainly acknowledge, that when we watch television, we go into kind of a trance state. We become, in essence, more suggestible. That much established, Stephen. Welcome back.
Yes. It would be good for your listeners to understand how television does this, because it's the very nature of the medium.
Okay.
The picture, although it appears to be stationary, it is actually flickering. We don't see the flickering consciously, but subconsciously the repeating pattern, the visual pattern pulsing, induces the trance state. Now, you may have seen this, a visual representation of this, because sometimes in movies, in the background, there is a television set on, and you'll see these black roll balls going up and down.
That's right. What you're talking about is 30 frames per second.
Yes. But it is the pulsing that induces the trance state, regardless of what we're watching. Now, there are techniques that are used to deepen that state of mind, deepen the hypnotic state of mind.
Okay.
From commercials, flashing words, flashing numbers, like prices flashing on and off the screen. Any repeating visual pattern is going to capture the attention of the eye to focus on that repetition so that it clears the mind of all thought, producing a state of mind very similar to daydreaming, but it is the hypnotic state of mind where we are the most susceptible to programming and more highly suggestible than at any other time. And that's
for example, Stephen, are you talking about where you'll watch a commercial and the product's there, and the price, $14.95, is flashing on and off, on and off, on and off to get your attention?
That's right.
Okay.
That deepens the state. Any repeating pattern is going to do that. Smoke, any camera movement, any repeating pattern movement is going to do it, visual or audio. You notice in news broadcasting, there are a number of techniques being used that are add to the this hypnotic induction. You have, with the newscaster, and many newscasts, you have the repeating musical a phrase that leads into the newscast itself.
Right.
Repeating pattern. You have repeating graphics very often.
Right.
So these simply deepen the trance state the television automatically produces. The speech pattern of a newscaster is very similar to the patterned speech of a hypnotist. Now, it doesn't matter whether a newscaster be black, white, oriental, Hispanic. They, with very few exceptions, they all speak pretty much the same way. They have a speech pattern that is associated in the mind of the viewer with the dissemination of true factual information. You have the speech pattern. You have the eye contact that is made between the newscaster looking directly into the camera and into the eyes of the viewer.
Well, you have an authoritative cadence.
That is correct. That is correct. They are authority figures.
Sure.
That's a very important element in programming because people will tend to accept information that comes from an authority figure, someone who they respect, someone who they accept as an authority.
Well, that's why Walter Cronkite, as an example, was so very successful. He was an authority figure. He was even a father figure.
That's right. And that reminds me of something that a New York City talk show host, television talk show, Joe Franklin, he had a show for about 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And when he retired, he was on The Tonight Show, and he was asked what was the secret of his longevity on the air.
Mm-hmm.
And what he said was very revealing. He said that the key was sincerity. When you learn how to fake that, you got it made.
When you learn how to fake sincerity, you got it made.
So, in effect, what the message is that it is the appearance that is important.
Yes.
And not the substance. And people can be fooled because all these books and programs, self-help programs on how to influence people and make friends, neuro-linguistic programming, all designed to use manipulative means and techniques to influence other people to do as you want them to do. Any good orator, any good politician, any good minister.
All right, but so far, you've described good programming to me. In other words, any television station that does not want a believable, authoritative anchor is out of its mind because that's what you want for the news. In other words, what I'm saying is, so far, I don't see anything deep and dark and evil at work here.
Well, we become very vulnerable and susceptible to misinformation as a result of the techniques that induce the state of mind that would allow us to accept something that may not necessarily be true.
Okay, in other words, if you sit down and you watch Tom Brokaw every night and you really trust Tom Brokaw and 99% of the time what he has to say is accurate, and he should happen to slip something in that is either not accurate or designed to be manipulative, it gets you.
Sure can. You remember the radio broadcast of the War of the Worlds?
Of course.
Okay, 1938. That famous broadcast, for your listeners who may not be familiar with it, it was H.G. Wells's, War of the Worlds that Orson Welles adapted and dramatized as a news broadcast. It was presented as a news broadcast.
With disclaimers.
With disclaimers.
Which a lot of people didn't hear.
Well, didn't pay attention to.
Yeah.
Because they were locked on to the form of the presentation, and it caused panic where people actually thought that New Jersey was being invaded by Martians.
Yeah. And New Jersey residents eaten.
Yeah.
And then,
in 1983, we have the television counterpart. There was a made-for-TV movie called Special Bulletin. This is in 1983. The story was about the detonation of a nuclear device in Charleston, South Carolina, but that fictional story was presented as a newscast. And as a result, because of how it was presented, a lot of people thought it was real, and they started calling the stations that were broadcasting it, carrying it, wanting to know if this was actually something that was happening.
No question about it. If you wanted to accomplish the same thing today, you would start it off with breaking news.
That's right. That's right.
That's true.
You remember when, the whole Monica Lewinsky story hit, it was about a week after the opening of the motion picture Wag the Dog.
Yeah. Oh yes.
Wag the Dog was the story about the president getting involved in a sex scandal and the decision being made to distract the public with a war, with a fictional war played solely on television.
I know. I saw the movie and I followed the scandal.
Okay. The parallels between what was actually happening in that movie are somewhat uncanny because of the amount of time that it takes to prepare a film before it goes into distribution. You get a question, is it coincidence?
Why should we not imagine it's coincidence?
Pardon?
Why should we not imagine it was coincidence?
Well, I question it. It could be, but then again, it may not have been, because shortly thereafter, while all this was being given a lot of coverage in the press, and we thought that that we might be going to war again with Iraq.
That's right.
On February 20th, which was a Friday, at 1 p.m., Dan Rather broadcast a practice run, a simulation of a news broadcast about the bombing of Baghdad.
You're absolutely correct. I mean, the coincidences are tremendous, but following that chain of logic, they just released Deep Impact, and early in July, we get Armageddon, and so I guess then we should be expecting something to come crashing through from space and wipe out some big city somewhere.
Well, not necessarily, but certainly we are being conditioned and programmed to have a particular mindset, and it does add to the stress and tension and anxiety that people feel. And inducing stress, anxiety, and tension in the population is a strategy of psychological warfare. It's as if the squeeze has been put on us, and we pressure upon pressure is heaped on people's shoulders, where people don't have time to do much else other than to work hard, to try to make a living, to try to make a living that came more easily 15, 20 years ago. People having to work harder today to make ends meet, and in many households, both spouses have to work just to make one paycheck.
Okay.
That set of circumstances, I contend, has been brought into existence intentionally to put the squeeze on us, because we are being distracted. All of energy is being used up, and we don't have the time to smell the roses and look around ourselves and to contemplate or to spend time considering what is actually going on around us. When we're all uptight, we're not seeing things as clearly as if we were at peace and calm.
Well, all right. May I ask you a question?
Sure.
The type of movie or the type of television program that you're talking about is one that the American people want. In other words, the ratings of any given show and or its financial success as a motion picture generally determine what the content of movies 6 months from now or a year will be. I'm saying it's driven by what the public is telling the industry by its dollar that it wants to see.
Well, the public can be conditioned to want certain things by the mere repetition of whatever is being presented. This was learned back in the days of radio, where a song could be made popular by virtue of
repetition.
Of the repetition.
No question about it.
Playing.
No question about it. I do it with bumper music all the time.
Right, right.
It's the hook.
What happened back in December not too long ago, of 97, the example of the television cartoon in Japan that sent 700 people, mostly children, to the
That's
hospital.
Right. That's right.
In that instance, in the cartoon, at a particular point, the stroboscopic flashes of light emanating from the eyes of one of the cartoon characters induced epileptic-like seizures in some of the children who were watching the program.
That's correct.
And other children experience nausea, dizziness, pain,
yes,
spells, and the like.
Yes.
Point being that it is an extreme example, but should serve as a wake-up call for parents in particular, and all of us, illustrating how television literally plugs into our nervous system.
All right, now, having said all that, you, at the beginning of the program, made a very provocative statement. You said that it is a scientifically induced nervous breakdown that they're trying to achieve. Now, first of all, who is they?
Well, they are the powers that be. They are the
government.
It's the money is the engine that moves society.
Agreed.
And whether or not we have an honest monetary system or a dishonest system, that is going to determine the direction of all of society's institutions. Now, presently, we are enslaved by a dishonest system. There are only two economic systems. You're either going to have a system of just weights and measures, using a substance as a medium of exchange, a barter system where a barter system is simply exchanging one thing of value for something else of value.
Right.
And for thousands of years, civilization settled upon gold and silver as being the standard money.
That's right.
The other economic system is a credit system.
Correct.
And credit is simply an idea. It's not tangible. It doesn't exist. And that's where the problem lies in that system.
It's all based on faith, really.
It's all based on faith. And it's based, and because of that, it is susceptible to widespread control and manipulation.
All right. Then here's just a square-on question for you, Stephen. If it is money that's driving this attempt to produce a scientifically induced nervous breakdown among the general populace or some portion thereof, why would it serve the interests of those who wished income to produce this awful thing in those that it wants to sell to?
Well, it's more than just creating a society of consumers. It's more a matter of creating a controllable society, one that can be manipulated with precision.
Oh, I understand, but I mean, if you manipulate somebody into a nervous breakdown, they're not going to be buying your product.
Oh, no, that is correct. And really, the bottom line of the mind control issue is really a spiritual issue. Everything points towards that. Manifestation in the material world, in the physical world, it shows itself in many different ways, most noticeably in what's happening with money and what society is using as money. But the mind is the gateway to the soul. That's why there's a mind control issue. And as far as the spiritual aspect of it is concerned, and this is really, the bottom line of the whole problem, is that we are first and foremost spiritual beings. We are eternal spiritual beings who find ourselves imprisoned inside a temporary physical body.
Okay.
We're not the physical body. We're the resident inside the body. But our culture and our programming is directed towards encouraging us to misidentify ourselves as the body, and to make our decisions based on that mistaken assumption, so that instead of people spending time to inquire why they are here, and what are we, what is the relationship to one another, what is the purpose of life, what objective is to be served here, instead of spending time on that, people spending the time spinning their wheels trying to make
a living. Okay, if I understand you correctly, you're saying that we are being intentionally programmed away from any consideration of our spiritual selves.
Most definitely.
All right, hold it right there. We're at the bottom of the hour. Stephen Jacobson is my guest, and he'll be right back, as will I, from the high desert in an area near Dreamland. This is Dreamland.
From the Kingdom of Nye, this is Dreamland with Art Bell.
It is, and my guest is Stephen Jacobson. We're talking about mind control. It's really a fascinating topic, and we're going to get back to him in just a moment. Stephen Jacobson is my guest. Mind control is the subject, and I'd like to possibly clarify something, Stephen. I've got a fax here suggesting that I may have been right about the FCC. It says the FCC authority to regulate subliminal messages is covered by sections 303 and 317 of the Communications Act. Additionally, sections 73.1212 of the FCC regulations also address covert advertisements. Now, I don't know that to be the case. That's simply a faxer who said it, but I thought it had been the case regarding the broadcasting of these things. Now, another fax, equally interesting, seems to suggest you could be correct. It says, regarding your guest who believes the media is somehow coordinated in its moral destruction of American society, the evidence does seem to bear him out. But if it is true, does he believe a spiritual force could be the organizer and the media editors and script writers are the unconscious dupes? Most Americans, including yourself, meaning me, believe the spiritual exists. In the Old Testament, the power of God was manifest in controlling the minds of certain individuals, and in some cases, as in the Hebrew Exodus, entire nations. I'm referring to the mind of the Pharaoh and his subjects. Now get this. In recent history, when the Egyptians virtually had the Six-Day War won with their surprise tank invasion of tiny Israel, for some reason, inexplicably and suddenly, the tank commanders were seized with terror and retreated. They could not explain why they did that, and subsequently many or most were executed. So your comments on either one or both, Steve?
Yeah, that is what that reminds me of is the broadcasting of subliminal messages during the Gulf War that caused Iraqis to surrender en masse. That example comes to mind from what you just had triggered that little piece of information. I don't know if that could be an element there, but certainly it is the bottom line problem is a spiritual problem, which is designed to keep us from understanding who we are and to prevent us, to thwart us from achieving the objective of our being here, and that is to fulfill the spiritual objective of life, which is to disentangle ourselves from our material consciousness and material conception of life. Everyone is trying to play God in one way or another, to be the master of what they survey, be the master of their world. And that's certainly a problem that we have with the prevailing ruling class that seeks to govern us and manipulate us through controlling the information that we have access to and by manipulating our mental states.
All right, well, this first or second factor said, are the media editors and script writers unconscious dupes of others in what they're doing?
I would say yes. I would say yes, and then I would also say that there are those who do understand what they are doing. It's like in any organization, you have your hierarchy where people know things on a need-to-know basis so that those who are doing particular tasks don't necessarily know how their job fits into the big picture. Now, one of the problems that we have with the communications industry, and this applies both to information and entertainment, is the consolidation of ownership of the different media, where you have press, publishing, radio, TV, and movies, the ownership being concentrated in fewer and fewer hands.
Absolutely, that, going on like crazy right
that
now.
That is, not only in telecommunications, but in every other area of human endeavor, there is a consolidation going on, and this is extremely dangerous because it allows for the coordination of propaganda, where back in 1983 there was a study done by and a book written titled Media Monopoly by Ben Bedikian, who was, if I recall correctly, he was a national editor for the Washington Post and dean of the Graduate School of Journalism at the University of California. When the first edition came out in 1983, He reported that there were 50 major corporations that were controlling most of America's media. And in subsequent updates of that particular book, the numbers went down to 29, to 27, and currently it's about 10 multinational corporations that are controlling not only the information that we have access to, but also the entertainment choices that are made available to us. Now, entertainment is not just entertainment. It is not harmless. It carries ideological content and messages about how society works, about what's right and wrong. And a lot of people, particularly young people, accept unquestioningly the reality that is presented to them by television.
All right, may I stop you for a second? And let me ask you this. Let's consider a large national media outlet. At what level in that large national media outlet would you imagine conscious manipulation would have to be taking place? At what level?
Oh, gee, well, certainly at the highest levels where it can be coordinated. Let me give you an example. Here's a movie that you could probably rent at Blockbusters. It's titled Agency. Dr. Wilson Brian Key was an advisor on the film, and Dr. Key has written about four or five books on the use of subliminals, particularly in advertising, but also in other areas. This particular book is about an ad agency that is taken over and being operated by a government intelligence agency. In this particular story, it's the CIA.
Yes.
And Lee Majors plays one of the employees who discovers that subliminal messages are being added to the political advertising. It's during a political year. Well, no one else is aware, except just a handful of people who are actually doing the work. The people at the ad agency don't know, but it is the very head and those who are working with him who are privy to what is going on. So you have that division of knowledge. Those at the very top do understand what the deal is.
So it could be done without the knowledge, for example, I don't know, in a TV show of the actors or case of a radio program like mine, without my knowledge?
Sure. Even in the case of, say, music and the use of backward masking and or use of hidden messages, those things can be added without a performing artist being aware of it. Although there are certainly instances of groups, particularly heavy metal groups, or groups involved in occultism that use these techniques intentionally.
Uh-huh. Again, I'm going to come back to motivation. You said it's all about money, and I can easily understand that it's all about money. Everything seems to be about money. But what I don't understand is why anybody would want to induce a scientifically induce a nervous breakdown in the general population or even some part of the general population. How would that serve anybody's interest?
Well, this softening up process that we're going through as a nation would facilitate our becoming part of a world government. It would be meant to facilitate that in the case of some of the drastic changes that have occurred in American education, they're designed to create a collective mentality and promote collectivism, socialism amongst by using the young as really guinea pigs for the program.
God, what an insidious, insidious thought. How do you prove, Stephen? Let's say that all you're saying is correct. How would you endeavor to begin to prove it?
Oh, you know, but now that that's why the audio cassettes, because I'm not in the business of producing tape after tape. The goal of the project was to produce high-quality educational materials that would give people the information they needed to understand the overall picture. So these first two audio cassettes are the results of more than 10 years' work. They're very tightly scripted and go in a step-by-step fashion to lead the listener through this maze and multifaceted world of mind control.
And we will absolutely give them a chance to get these audio tapes. But here, give me the 101 here. I mean, give me some sense of how you would prove, a short answer if there is one, that this really is going on.
Oh, gee, there is so much documentation available. I've built up a library of literally hundreds and hundreds of books dealing with different aspects of the problem. Here's part of the problem, and it illustrates a primary means by which we are manipulated and controlled, and it's really very basic and very simple, and that is control of information. If we don't have all the information we need on any given subject, then our judgment and decision-making is going to reflect any errors or any omission in our fund of information.
Absolutely.
Now, that it illustrates a big problem that we have, and that is we don't have the information we need. There are big holes in our fund of information that prevent us from seeing that big picture. Some pieces to the puzzle are missing intentionally. There is information that is simply not available to established media outlets, and that one has to seek it out. And when I got involved in this investigation initially, when I got the research materials, there were several books included there that dealt with the quote-unquote conspiracy theory of history. And I went through the bibliography of both of those and began to gather information on different topics simply to see what was out there. The goal is to understand, is to increase understanding and to be relatively certain that the information is accurate and truthful. And the whole goal is to understand with accuracy. And so The documentation on different aspects of this, whether it be political or economic, the information is out there. One has to simply seek it out. It does exist. And I'll use one illustration, though, to show how pervasive this control is. And it's very basic. It has to do with money, these pieces of paper that we all carry in our billfold, and call money.
Yes.
Our currency looked very different back in 1963. There was a switch done. Our Federal Reserve notes between 1914 and 1963 looked different from what they do now, notwithstanding the changes in design in our currency. On our currency, it said that the United States of America will pay to the bearer on demand X number of dollars. In other words, if it was a $10 bill, it said, we'll pay to the bearer on demand $10, which meant that the piece of paper wasn't the $10, it represented $10. Now, a dollar is a unit of measurement for gold and silver coin. If there's no gold and silver coin, then the use of the word dollar is very misleading because it's...
It is no longer that.
We're not measuring anything in dollars. We're simply using using numbers that represent absolutely nothing. The point is that the only way paper currency is honest is when it is redeemable for something real, something that is represents wealth. In other words, gold or silver. And our Constitution...
Well, wait a minute now. They are not the only things that represent wealth. Things represent wealth. If you go out and exchange that money you're talking about and get a car, then you have made a meaningful exchange.
Sure, but your medium of exchange that you're exchanging wealth for wealth. Now, for thousands of years, gold and silver was used as the medium of exchange,
yes,
as the standard.
I'm aware of that.
And even our Constitution mandates that this is what we are supposed to be using.
I'm aware of that argument as well.
Now, the only way the paper currency is honest, or can be honest, is when there's a one-to-one relationship between the paper, which is really a money substitute,
yep,
and the real money being held in the vault, like the gold and silver. The problem goes back to the Middle Ages.
Well, the problem is also, though, Stephen, the size of our economy. We could not right now back every dollar with an equivalent amount of gold or silver. There is not enough gold or silver to do that.
Well, I've heard that argument too. And the reason why the numbers are so ridiculous is that it wasn't held down to manageable numbers because it's not tied to anything of substance. When we went off the standard of using metal as our standard money, and the paper simply being a money substitute representing the metal. When we went off that...
All right, we're off into an economic constitutional argument, and I'm not exactly sure why it bears on...
Well, it's part of the mind control issue, because unless you get an honest money system, then money is being used as a weapon to destroy society. It's being used to give direction to all of society's institutions, and since we see everything crumbling around us, it is as a result of how money influence is being applied.
Okay, but there's also free will, and I tell you there is free will because a lot of people are able to go out and not indulge credit card companies, not indulge long mortgages. They just don't play that game, and they pay cash. Now, if you do that, you're still getting a fair exchange, and you're not being sucked into what I understand you're talking about.
Well, the reason that a so-called money doesn't maintain its value over a period of time, and that its purchasing power goes up and down, and usually down, is because of the dishonesty of this credit system that we've been enslaved with. That's why the gold and silver bullet in the Constitution, the founding fathers had the same experience with paper currency. The problem goes back to the Middle Ages when people would bring their valuables to the goldsmith to have them stored in his vault, and he'd give them a receipt for the gold or silver, whatever was being assured.
Sure.
And the receipt wasn't the money. It was the money substitute. And because it was convenient to use the money substitute instead of carrying around the gold and silver, people began to use the paper receipt as if it were the real money, because they had confidence they could go to the goldsmith and reclaim the real wealth being held on deposit.
I have no argument with the purity of your argument. You are correct.
I'm just getting into what happened.
Okay.
Well, it illustrates why we have a runaway inflation here and why the dollar doesn't maintain its value.
Inflation is very low right now, Stephen.
Pardon?
It's very low right now.
Yeah, and this is the reason why, this kind of manipulation of its value. The goldsmith, the unscrupulous goldsmith, seeing that very few people would come in and claim the real wealth on deposit, he began issuing receipts for more gold than he had in the vault. And when he created his first receipt for gold that didn't exist, he created both credit and inflation. They're both the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Illustrating that there has to be that one-to-one relationship between the money substitute, the paper currency, and what is being held in the vault. Once you get off that one-to-one standard, the system is ripe for total manipulation. And this allowed the goldsmith of the Middle Ages to manipulate the economic activity of his community and artificially create depressions and then stipulate the economy.
Yeah, I'm going to stipulate all of this, Steve, so that we don't have to go through it. How do we get from there to children taking guns into school and killing their classmates and teachers?
Well, the economic pressures that are put on families, most problems...
You think it's economic?
That's right.
You think this is economic? All right.
And that's why economic warfare and psychological warfare always work together. It's a twin pincer movement. It's like a vice.
All right, Stephen, listen, we've got a break here. We're at the top of the hour, and we'll be right back. Stephen Jacobson is my guest. He's talking about mind control. I'm Art Bell, and this is Dreamland.
Talk with Art Bell on Dreamland from the Kingdom of Nye. East of the Rockies, dial 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, 1-800-618-8255, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222, or call Art on the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. Now again, here's Art Bell.
Once again, here I am. Good evening, everybody. Stephen Jacobson is my guest, and he'll be back in a moment. This might interest you. From Reuters, Switzerland's Radioactivity Surveillance Office said on Friday it detected radiation levels more than 1,000 times above the normal at the beginning of June, but they have since returned to normal. The accident, I repeat, the accident is believed to have been caused when a machine containing the radioactive material cesium-137 was accidentally melted down in a furnace along with other scrap metal. The president of Greenpeace Spain on Sunday lashed out at both the company and the watchdog, saying the incident was, quote, a huge botch job, end quote. We don't yet know the size of the problem, but whatever the dose of radiation, it affects the environment, he said. We've asked the Nuclear Security Council for more details and more transparency in its operations, end quote, she said. I shouldn't be laughing about this, but it really is hard to know what to believe, isn't it? All right, back now to my guest, Stephen Jacobson, and we are going to take calls shortly. Stephen, welcome back.
Yes, my pleasure.
Again, I'm going to ask again, if you hear of a 12-year-old that walks into a classroom, kills the teacher, kills the students, I'm not quite certain how you say that's economic.
I'm saying economics is a factor in placing pressure on people where there'll be problems at home. A lot of family problems center around money.
No question about it.
And so that a dishonest economic system designed to place pressure on people is simply heaping, over a period of time, heaping pressure upon pressure on people. They do have that breaking point. Now, in the case of children,
yes,
you have this factor of the influence that media has on them. There is a direct connection between the graphic depiction of violence in media and what happens out here in the street. Now, many motion pictures have precipitated violence over the years, going all the way back to D.W. Griffith and The Birth of a Nation, that caused riots in different cities where it played, up through the 1970s, the different gang-related movies that also caused violence.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, but in spite of all that, and then we have the Deer Hunter example, where the press reported that about 28 people imitated the Russian roulette scene in that movie and committed suicide. And then John Hinckley and his reference to the movie Taxi Driver, giving him the idea to assassinate President Reagan. In spite of those examples, one example alone indicates that there's a problem, and that is that the military, and in particular a doctor at NATO, has used film to desensitize men who were not inclined to go into a battlefield situation, to desensitize them so that they could do their job as soldiers. Now, they were shown films of people being killed violently and being maimed. Now, if the military uses film in that way to obtain that kind of result, it's not such a great stretch to consider the impact that graphic violence has on young people in particular who grow up with a steady diet of violence, from the cartoon violence that shows no consequences for violence and it's played as slapstick, to movies like the Home Alone series, where you have a youngster doing things that in real life would cause serious injury or even death and being played for laughs. Well, children look at television in a different way than adults do, and they think things are real until they get a little older. And even then, a lot of people won't accept what they are seeing, and it gives them messages about how society works, and very often violence is presented as an acceptable means of problem solving.
Stephen, let me stop you and ask you to clear something up for me.
Yes.
As I told you at the beginning of the show, I'm soon going to be 53 years old. When I was young, we had lots and lots of violence. Cowboys and Indians kind of violence.
Mm-hmm.
We had the Three Stooges kind of violence.
Yes.
We had cartoon violence. We had plenty of violence when I was young. We didn't have as many children going into class and killing their fellow students and teachers as we do today. So where is the difference between the mid-50s and today?
Oh, gee, it's a world of difference. It was a different world in the 1950s. It was a world of the of Leave It to Beaver, the Donna Reed Show, Father Knows Best, and that changed into Father Knows Nothing with the television program Married with Children. There was a time where there were very clear demarcations between what was right and wrong, and those lines, for many people, have blurred. Also, you have the transformation that American education has undergone over the years. When you and I were going to school, things were a lot different than what young people today are confronted with in school. And this part of this problem goes back to the early part of the century and the changes that our American educational system have undergone, where there was a dramatic shift in emphasis in American education from intellectual development to socialization. The goals of education became social and political rather than academic. Mm-hmm. And this was due in large part to John Dewey and his progressive educational reforms that were based on the experimental psychology developed by Professor Wilhelm Wundt at the University of Leipzig in Germany. Dr. Wundt believed that man had no soul, that we were simply stimulus response animals. And that kind of idea was transmitted to educational psychology, and that infiltrated our school system, where John Dewey didn't believe there was a God. He didn't believe that there was there were any moral absolutes, right and wrong. And all these things have infiltrated into our educational system, where this is the result. We see the result in this kind of irrational behavior.
So then, if I've got this right, you believe that there is a nationwide, probably worldwide, long-term conspiracy, in effect, brainwashing us toward the eventual control of a singular control of the entire world.
Sure, and I think we're already at that point because of the situation with money and how it is controlled, that we have been under this kind of control for a good while. And in this country, in 1913 is really when we lost it, when the Federal Reserve System came into being, where the money system of this country was turned over to private individuals.
Okay, let's ask the audience some questions, or allow them to ask you some. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Stephen Jacobson. Hello.
Hello, good morning. Good evening, Mr. Bell. Mr.
Yes.
Jacobson, nice to meet you both. My name is also Stephen. I'm calling from Hampton, Virginia.
Okay.
I am a retired broadcaster. I've been out of the business now about 4 years. I work for the private sector now.
All right. You mean you were in the...
I was a radio announcer, okay?
Okay. All right.
I have to take some issue with some of the points that Mr. Jacobson is bringing up tonight. I don't feel he's giving listeners and viewers credit for their intelligence by assuming that they are so easily mind-controlled. Now, granted, surely the media wants to get ratings. They're in the business of attracting viewers and listeners.
That's right, yes.
In my 25 years of broadcasting, I was never a part of any type of subliminal broadcasting or anything.
All right, well,
like
let me stop you right there. I am in the same business you were in, all right?
Yes, sir.
And I am probably the third or fourth most listened to talk show host in America right
that
now.
That you are.
Okay, that's why I asked Stephen earlier, at what level of a large broadcast, multinational corporation even, would there be awareness? And he said, only at the very top. And so I didn't pursue it for the same reason I think you can't pursue it. I mean, how do you know that there were not messages inserted at some level way past you before what you were had on the air was being transmitted, or that you unintentionally transmitted a material that would have affected people? The answer is you can't know. Either can I.
Well, what I do feel that, you know, during my broadcast years, that I was saying what I felt, just as you do.
You bet.
I also feel, though, that listeners had intelligence enough to either like it or not like it, believe it or not believe it.
Yes, but he is discussing subliminal messaging that you might have known not known you were doing, or might have occurred later in the chain after your microphone.
My answer to him would be that I felt in my years of broadcasting, and you know you worked for a lot of stations in 25 years.
Oh yeah.
That you get close enough to the engineers, to the owner, to your bosses, your coworkers, that you know what's going on. It's a ratings business. You're trying to attract the most amount of listeners that you can, but I never had anyone come up to me and tell me that they thought they were being affected subliminally. I can't say I was the most popular announcer in town. It wasn't that way.
No, what you're doing is you're saying, look, I always said what I wanted to say.
Right.
I was a free agent.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And I would say exactly the same thing. Believe
yes.
me, I would say the same thing. But the way Mr. Jacobson put this to me, he stopped me because how do I know that at some other point something is not being inserted that I know nothing about? I can't be absolutely certain of that.
Well, if there were any, if he's suggesting that possibly the FCC was involved in this, I would say absolutely not. They have so dropped all restrictions on what radio stations can do. They don't really care anymore.
Well,
they're in the business of license.
Look, that would strengthen, not weaken his argument. You're right. They've deregulated like crazy. They've barely got the staff to watch over things. That would strengthen his argument, I'm sorry to say.
Well,
I'm not saying it's so. I'm saying I'm willing to consider it. I appreciate your call, sir.
That's all right. Thank you.
You want to respond at all, Stephen?
Well, we're seeing things from a different perspective. Even when I was working in media, I wasn't asked to do things intentionally that were misleading. But whoever is paying the bills on a particular project, all projects, all programs have a particular point of view. And that is determined by who's putting up the money. And now, I may not have always agreed with what it was that I was presenting, but I certainly knew that whether it was a government documentary or a promotional piece, that it had a particular point of view that was determined by the client.
Yeah, but ultimately, I would argue with that caller, Stephen, that what the American people hear is determined and driven by ratings. And you can connect that directly to money because it is connected directly to money. Money
yes.
equals ratings, ratings equal money. No question about it. But what the American people hear is driven by ratings. So at what point would the manipulation occur?
I've illustrated some of the components. The mechanism is to get us in a particular state of mind where information can be implanted and then repeated over a period of time to elicit a conditioned response. The whole point of propaganda, whether it's by an advertiser or a political propagandist, is to build in that conditioned response so that we are, when we are presented with that piece of information, we respond automatically without thinking about it. Now, unless we unless we are aware of the mechanism, we are not aware that we are being manipulated. People have a tendency to believe things that are consistent with what they already believe. There's a term for it, cognitive dissonance. What doesn't fit into what we already believe, we have a tendency to involuntarily and automatically reject. So that if someone has an inclination not to consider that there could be a conspiracy in operation because they had not heard of it, then any information that tended to go in the direction that there is a conspiracy, they simply wouldn't give it credence and would not.
I am certainly open-minded enough to imagine that there could be such a conspiracy. Period. Your early points with regard to the hypnotic state or the trance state induced when you're watching TV, reading, listening to the radio, whatever, given, I'll give it to you. And TV is stronger than radio with regard to its ability to put you deeper in that state. No
and not just television, popular music does this as well.
Yep.
And that's of particular importance regarding young people in this country, because music, Plato and Aristotle believed that people could be controlled by music, and our bodies literally can be played as if they were musical instruments. Different frequency tones affect different parts of the body, and we feel these vibrations. Now, in the case of a lot of popular rock music, you have a bass rhythm pattern that is louder than the melody. And that repeating pattern does a number of things. One, it functions as the focal point to distract the sense of hearing to get us, get the listener locked on to the repeating pattern of the repeating musical pattern. But there's another effect of using low-frequency bass tones that when the volume is up high, it affects the secretion of hormones that affect the male and female sexual responses so that the music will feel good. Now, and serve as a distraction while people are focused on the physical sensation.
I agree.
They're not listening to the message of the lyrics.
I absolutely agree with all your general assessments. What I have not yet had proven to me is a conscious, evil effort to manipulate society toward a complete breakdown, which is what you would have to have before you would accept some sort of global governance, some great savior to come along and save your butt and pull your butt out of the fire. You follow me? I accept all your premises, but you haven't yet, for me, made the connection to the specific dark conspiracy to do what you think is underway.
Well, I think perhaps then you need to hear these audio cassettes because, one, it's different than a conversation. It's very tightly scripted, leading from the beginning to its conclusion to show how all these things fit together.
All right. When we come back, we'll tell everybody how to get those audio cassettes, and we'll take some more calls. And we'll see how you feel about all of this out there. Good evening, everybody, from the high desert, where it's very pleasant, finally, and actually warming up a few degrees. Boy, it's been strange weather, hasn't it? In an area near Dreamland, I'm Art Bell, and this is Dreamland.
To talk with Art Bell on Dreamland from the Kingdom of Nye. From east of the Rockies, dial 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, 1-800-618-8255. If you're a first-time caller to Dreamland, recharge at area code 702-727-1222. This is Dreamland with Art Bell.
And here is breaking news. Stephen, did you just sit up straight? Breaking news. There's been a 5.6 magnitude earthquake In eastern Japan, we don't have any more details just yet, but 5.6 somewhere in eastern Japan. And we'll see from there, I'm sure, in the next hour or two, depending on the news source, whether there has been any damage or casualties reported. We'll get back to Stephen Jacobson in a moment. All right, back now to Stephen Jacobson. Stephen, you do have audio tapes available on the subject in great detail.
Yes.
How many and how much?
Presently, there are two audio cassettes, and I'm working on the next two in the series.
Okay.
The two tapes that are available, Mind Control in America and Wake Up America, they can either be ordered separately or together as a set, and I make a special offer to your listening audience who are interested in the in knowing more about the subject. Mind Control in America, when ordered by itself, the special price is $12. That includes postage. Wake Up America, ordered by itself, special pricing is $13. And the two tapes ordered together as a set, the total is $22, and that includes first-class shipping. That's for both Mind Control in America and Wake Up America. And they can be ordered by sending the order to me, Stephen Jacobson, at MCIA Media. That's the initials for Mind Control in America Media, MCIA Media. Post Office Box 15734. That's Post Office Box 15734, Winston-Salem, it's two words hyphenated, Winston-Salem, North Carolina, zip 27113. That's MCIA Media, Post Office Box 15734, Winston-Salem, North Carolina, zip 27113. For anyone who has any questions, my phone number here in Winston-Salem is area code 336-723-6535. 336-723-6535. And that's two audio cassettes, Mind Control in America and Wake Up America. The total for the two, which includes shipping, is $22.
All right. Good enough. Let's go back to the phones and see what people say. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Stephen Jacobson. Hello.
Hello. I have a very strange incident that happened in my neck of the woods last week at an elementary school where 18 kids were rushed to the hospital after ingesting diet pills and Motrin, and they were influenced by one child who took them from his mother, apparently. And all of these children, they were in the fifth or sixth grade, and they were all repeatedly told and taught in school and taught by their parents not to take drugs from other people and so forth. And so their parents were all quite shocked that they were influenced so much to do this. And what I wanted to know was, it would be interesting to do like a case study on this other than just a criminal investigation, but to find out what these kids had done prior, for instance, common music that they listened to, you know, what their activities were that led up to this. And I was wondering, is there a investigative company or investigative firm that deals with investigating these incidents?
I don't know. It's a good question. Stephen?
Gee, that is a good question. I think that, let's see, there is an organization. And if let me see if I can get the Citizens Commission on Human Rights in Los Angeles. They, I believe, do investigate incidents like this. And in fact, in some of their information, they point out the use of psychoactive drugs that are prescribed for young people, Ritalin in particular, and also Prozac. In this most recent shooting, I believe that
absolutely in general use in America right now.
Yeah, yeah,
no question about it. All right, here's a fact which says the guest tonight very interesting, especially in light of the fact that he is discussing the exact same subject, which is creating so much furor with a new movie, The Truman Show. Now, I haven't seen The Truman Show. I want to. I have no idea what it's about. Do you know offhand whether it relates to what you are discussing tonight?
It probably does. I haven't seen it either. But from what I gather, it does have to do with this reality that we are living in that has been created by the media. And that we're not living in the real world. That's part of our problem.
Okay. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stephen Jacobson. Hello.
Hello, Art. Hello, Stephen.
Hi.
Pleasure to talk to you. This is John in Minneapolis.
Hi, John.
I wanted to comment on something here, and that is the effect of heavy metals and like such as zinc and cadmium. And studies that they've done that have shown that people that are, you know, a large percentage of people incarcerated have high levels of cadmium. Is that true? I mean, it's something that I've heard.
All right. That's a fair question. Chemical similarities or commonalities with regard to criminal activity. Anything on that, Stephen?
Well, one of the ways of manipulating people in their thinking is by influencing mental states. So that covers a wide range. We touched on one aspect of it, and that is the use of hypnotic techniques in media and how television, because of its very nature, it manipulates one's mental state. Also, food additives, chemicals, and drugs can do the same thing. As far as there being any common denominator of something that is in the water, so to speak, I don't know. Certainly, there has been a lot written about fluoride and how it has negative effects on us and even impacts how we process information. All these things are related. Everything is related.
So there is no single specific thing that you point to in this conspiracy, but rather it is a cumulative effect.
That is correct. A lot of things working together. A key element of programming is simply repetition of the message. In the case of a lot of popular music that young people listen to, you cannot clearly distinguish the lyrics consciously. And that poses some special problems, because if you cannot understand the words clearly, you cannot make the conscious free will choice to accept or reject the message.
Well, if you're not understanding it, you must be suggesting that though your conscious mind is not understanding it, your subconscious is receiving the message loud and clear.
The point. It's that information is getting lodged in the subconscious, and we're not adding our file information. We're not coding it with whether or not we accept or reject it. Someone else is coding it, and that means it can be triggered, activated at a later time.
Yeah, I don't reject that concept at all. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stephen Jacobson. Hello.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening. Where are you?
I'm John from Reno, Nevada.
Okay, John.
First of all, happy birthday to you, Art, coming up on Wednesday.
Coming up, thanks.
And Mr. Jacobson, there is a curious effect I started noticing about 5 years ago on most of the major networks. And, for the lack of a better term, I call it the digital shift. And most of my friends and relatives didn't notice until I pointed it out to them. And the best way to describe it is that I work on an older computer, and a lot of times I run some of the newer software, it has to slow down in order to accommodate all the data that's coming through on the screen. And you get this sort of like time delay shift. Well, a lot of the networks, most of the major ones that have popular shows on them, I'll go through the process and name all of them. But every once in a while, during the programs, especially on some of the hotter series, they'll have this segment where, there's a shift where the character will freeze for a second on the screen, and it sort of stretches out for a brief second, and then all of a sudden it resumes its normal pace.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way I can figure out what's going on there is that there's an information overload coming down over the signal. I was just wondering if I could get a comment on that from you.
Well, interesting. I think that there are a number of techniques that contribute to some problems that many people have, young people in particular. The use of cutting patterns, quick cutting, and quickly changing camera angles and use of these shifts, as you were describing, they program a short attention span. So that because television literally plugs into our nervous system, young children, when they are away from television, get fidgety and have difficulties focusing their attention. In fact, the attention deficit disorder is closely connected to this because of the effect that this quick cutting has on young people.
There is an alternative explanation for what he was talking about as well. If I understood correctly, he was talking about digital transmission. Now, in the world of digital transmission, when you miss a bit or two, even with error correction, this is kind of computer type stuff, but it's a digital transmission. When you miss a bit or two, it freezes. It's the nature of the type of digital transmission they're making, and you'll see a character freeze for a second. That means you missed a bit, and then it'll resume. So there is a technical explanation for that that doesn't necessarily involve mind control. On the first-time caller line, you're on the air with Stephen Jacobson. Hello.
Hello. Yes. Am I on?
Yes, you are. Where are you?
In Chehalis, Washington.
Okay.
I have two questions. Very important. One, shocking in the body. Does he know anything about the government shocking people in the bodies?
Shocking people?
Yeah.
Yeah,
electric shocks?
Electric shocks, yes. How would the government be shocking people, ma'am?
The grays are putting these things in the people's bodies.
Oh, you mean implants?
Yeah.
All right. She's talking about the phenomenon of implants, and I take it that's out of your field.
Well, it's not an area that I really delve into. The mind control issue covers a wide spectrum. The use of implants have been investigated by different governments and intelligence agencies that have been involved in the research of technology to impact on consciousness. But as far as the connection with the UFO phenomenon, that's not within the scope of what I'm currently.
Well, involved. The one thing that I don't doubt is that any government, including our government, would be interested in control of the masses that it pretends to serve. Now, I don't doubt that for a second. And how you get to it in specifics, I don't know. And I back to the phones. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Stephen Jacobson. Hi.
Yeah, hello. Art Bell and Mr. Jacobson.
Yes.
My name's Lena. I'm calling from Canada. And I have a question regarding receiving another person's thoughts. I've experienced this some time ago, and I found a way to focus elsewhere and carry on with my life. And I had a young person approach me and request answer as to how would your guest, Stephen Jacobson, explain this to a young person to control this reception of other people's thoughts and or block them. So as to not let it be a distraction or an interference with one's daily existence.
All right, Stephen.
Interesting question, because we all in varying capacities pick up information intuitively when we are dealing with people. All the same neural pathways that are activated when we're speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Are activated when we are thinking, so that thinking is literally subvocal thought. And for this reason, it can be monitored electronically and also interfered with electronically. As far as how do you protect yourself, it's a twofold protection. One is with information about the principles involved in programming, but the real problem has a spiritual foundation. The solution has to be also resides on that platform. That the we're not going to solve the problems that we face in this country or the world or our own particular problems by trying to do Band-Aid measures and fix this and that and hope that everything is going to be okay. The problems are very major and fundamental, and I believe that it requires a raising of our awareness and consciousness so that we pierce through, we see through this illusion and the smokescreen that has been created in front of us.
But according to you, all media, movies, television, radio, all input that we are given is driving us in exactly the opposite direction, not causing us to become aware of our spiritual
self. Oh, no, you're right. It is driving us in the opposite direction. So, again, because it is a spiritual foundation, that God lives in each and every one of us, and spiritual discipline is meant for us to make connection with God within so that we gain access to guidance and direction that is specific and particular to us as individuals. Well, a ruling class that seeks to play God and wishes to have us do their bidding, they don't want us to fulfill that objective where we are listening to that still small voice inside. They want us to get locked into the conditioned responses that they spend so much time and money building within us so that we get lost in our own thinking, and because we think in terms of patterns, habit patterns.
Yes, I understand exactly what you're saying. So, this radio show is not long enough for us to properly explore so that people will understand what you're saying. It takes a pretty broad view to jump into what you're saying without requiring specifics, because there aren't specifics. It's a much broader picture that you're drawing. I follow that much, Stephen.
Just to give the general idea of where the source of the problem lies, that because we are spiritual beings, essentially that's who we are, and the situation we find ourselves in is not a natural situation, because a spiritual being living and trying to be happy in a material world is like a fish trying to live on dry land. It's not a compatible situation, and it requires our taking a moment out from our lives to examine what we're doing here and what we think is really important.
Yep. I don't reject that at all. First-time caller line, we're almost out of time. You're on the air with Stephen Jacobson. Hi.
Hi, this is Larry calling from Bellingham.
Hi.
Art, keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Stephen,
yes.
I want to share something interesting with you. Back in 93, I stopped watching TV. It changed my life. And I think TV is the primary culprit.
Yes.
It changed my life because I started focusing and started reading books and started getting interested in my spiritual life and consciousness and things like Robert Goldsworth talks about and others. Mm-hmm. And And I guess what I would say is that since I've stopped watching TV, that when I get together and meet with people my own age group, economic group, that what I find is that they're so caught up into the materialism and they don't understand why my life is simplified. And I find it more and more difficult to relate to people. And when I do occasionally, like at the fitness club, I'll watch a commercial, a news break, whatever, I can't believe how fast it is and how confusing it is and how unsettling it is to my very being.
You've made the best call of the night, but we're out of time. Stephen, we are utterly out of time, and we really, really, really need a lot more time for your point to be driven home, but I'm beginning to get it here toward the end of the program.
Well, it's a beginning.
And that caller, I think, was right on the money.
Definitely.
So listen, all I can do is say thank you. I'm sorry we didn't have more time. We'll do this again in detail, all right?
I've enjoyed it all. Thank you very much.
Take care. Stephen Jacobson, folks. Mind control. And I assume that for most of you who were listening, the same light bulb began to go off. Well, with radio, we do have a lot of time, so we'll do it again with Stephen. I'm Art Bell from the High Deserts, an area near Dreamland. Good night.
This has been Dreamland, a program dedicated to an examination of areas in the human experience not easily nor neatly put in a box. Things seen at the edge of vision, awakening a part of the mind as yet not mapped. Yet things every bit as real as the air we breathe but don't see. Please join us again next week at this time for Dreamland.
Thank you.